All right, well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about, I guess, what's now my favorite topic. Here's a list of collaborators over the years, and also some other people who have written on this topic. I read recently an article which said that every talk should start with a motivation. And I thought that was well argued in the article. So here it is. The main goal here is to understand the structure of galactic halos. And two powerful reasons for this is that most issues in galactic dynamics require understanding of galactic halos, since the galaxy is embedded in a halo. And more importantly, from my own point of view, you want to understand galactic halos to predict signals in dark matter surges. In particular, I've been motivated over the year to try and predict what would be seen in the axion search in Lawrence Livermore lab if it happened to find a signal. It turns out that it would be able to measure the velocity spectrum on Earth of dark matter particles with very great precision. It would measure the kinetic energy spectrum with a precision of something one part in 100,000. So what galactic halo models are there? I've made a list of three models here, including my complaints about them. The oldest model is the isothermal model, which is actually very elegant, but I think its drawback is that it is not well motivated a priori. That is to say, if you have a halo, even if it were thermalized, it would accrete additional matter, and you can show that these infalling particles do not thermalize. So the isothermal model cannot really be complete. Actually, the dominant model as far as citations and so on is based upon n-body simulations. But my complaint about those models based upon them, is that the simulations have a too small number of particles to resolve the halo. And you have to keep in mind here that the halo is a six-dimensional object. It is not a three-dimensional object. It lives in phase space because the cold dark matter is collisionless. Everywhere in space, there is a velocity distribution. And with 10 to the 7 particles resolving phase space, which is six-dimensional, is like resolving this page with 100 particles. And I think that tells you it cannot be very good. Now, the Coster Gang model is the one that I'm going to expound, and I have no complaints about it, but you may have. What mass range of galactic halos? Say 10 to the 13 solar masses, like our own halo, and a distance scale of, say, 2 megaparsec or something like that. Okay, so a brief outline. Dark matter caustics actually expected purely on topological grounds, and I want to emphasize that. So the occurrence of dark, well, the occurrence of dark matter caustics is just an issue of topology with very minimal other assumptions thrown in, which I'll list. And I think that's very nice because, as you know, if an object is essentially topological, then it is stable under deformations, it's stable under dynamics, and so on. However, to go further and predict a galactic halo has two types of caustics. Surrounding the halo or the galaxy are spheres, which are caustics, and then within more or less the galactic plane there are rings. And I claim these are just the result of topology. To go further and predict where the radii of the what are the radii of the rings, I have to make a further assumption, which is that of self-similar info. With this assumption, the radii fall more or less like one upon an integer. Say the first one is at 40 kiloparsec, then 20 kiloparsec, 13.3, 10, and so on. So 40 kiloparsec divided by an integer up to some overall scale, which depends upon the halo. And then in the third part of the talk, I will present some observational evidence for this law. Please interrupt whenever you like. It's very welcome. So,
Why do caustics, other caustics, spheres, not triaxial spherules?
Oh, I don't mean, sorry, so topological spheres. Okay, I don't mean them to be geometrical spheres. Yeah. So, similarly for the rings, they are not circles, you know, they are only topological. Maybe ring is not exactly the right word for this.
By caustic, what exactly is that, like an overdensity of other amount? What is a caustic?
Yes. I didn't bring my transparencies about that, but a caustic is a place where there's a large density of particles because the particles lie on a sheet in phase space, and the sheet has a fold which, when projected down upon physical space, produces a divergence in the density in the limit where the sheet is very thin. Actually, I will show more further, but you know, caustics are very common in the propagation of light. As we all know, for example, a rainbow is a form of caustic. And the reason it's common in the propagation of light is that light is collisionless, but so is dark matter. And light, in many cases, has low velocity dispersion because the source is very far. That's condition number two. There are basically two conditions: low velocity dispersion and collisionless propagation. But you see, dark matter have these two same properties, so that you should expect dark matters to have caustics on some general ground.
I'm confused.
Yes.
When you talk about sheets, are you talking about sheets in the 6N dimensional phase space or the 6 dimensional phase space?
The 6 dimensional phase space.
Why should it form a sheet in 6 dimensional phase space?
This is the object of this transparency.
Oh, okay. Explain that.
I'll explain that. Yeah, I was jumping a little bit ahead. So I want to figure out what is the phase space structure of galactic halos. I go to some early time and ask what is the phase space structure then. And this is this sheet. This sheet is the green line, but I'm showing in a two-dimensional cut of phase space, x and x dot. Okay.
Why should it lie on the green? What defines the green line?
What defines the green line? If there were no density perturbations, I would draw this to be exactly a straight line, because it will just reflect the Hubble expansion at an early time, with the velocity in the x direction being proportional to the distance in x. Particles are just flowing with the Hubble law. This line would have a certain thickness, which is the primordial velocity dispersion. The thickness of the line reflects the fact that if you go at some position, you will have some dispersion in velocity. So I go to the primordial state of the universe, I look at all the axions or all the whims, and I ask what is their primordial velocity dispersion. That's the thickness of this line, which I call little delta V. It turns out that this thickness is extremely small for the cold dark matter candidates. Actually, that's the reason why they're called cold dark matter. They have negligible primordial velocity dispersion. If you were to draw this line for neutrinos, it would have to be qualitatively much thicker, because neutrinos are warm dark matter, they have much larger velocity dispersion.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, in standard statistical mechanics textbook, you draw some, in a microcanonical ensemble, you draw something in 6n-dimensional phase space.
Correct.
But here, you're drawing in 6-dimensional phase space, but you are superimposing all the different particles, and you get a band.
Correct.
Okay, so
thank you for
the band be sort of rather straight rather than this irregular shape? I mean, if you statistically, you have so many particles.
Well, so let me come to your first point, okay, which I'm glad you're pointing out. I am talking about the 6-dimensional phase space, and I'm putting all the particles in the same space,
right,
because they are collisionless.
Okay.
That means that the particles are just moving in the overall gravitational field of the galaxy. And so that if I write an equation of motion for these particles, they are just moving in a time-dependent field, in which, by the way, Liouville theorem would be obeyed in this phase space, the 6-dimensional phase space. So the particles in this space are just little dots.
Right, right.
But I'm taking the number of dots to be infinite.
Right, right.
Because there are 10 to the 84 axions in a galactic halo.
So I would expect a band, right? Why this would be one?
Okay, so in the limit of... Okay, so the wiggles are because of density perturbations. In the limit of no density perturbations, the line would just be straight, and it would have some thickness. And that's what you mean. I mean, all the little dots would have some thickness, which is the primordial velocity dispersion. As it is, there are density perturbations, and they start to cause the particles to move. Those are called the peculiar velocities, which are indicated by delta V. And so when the time goes on, actually, two things happen qualitatively, is that by stretching, little delta V goes down, but by gravitational instability, big delta V becomes larger. Because as time goes on, densities will grow, the peculiar velocities will grow. There's actually a lot in this transparency, and I... So in the cosmic microwave background, you would see this, you know, at a Z of 100,000 or something. And basically these wiggles would be so tiny, they're extremely hard to see, as we know. Is that what you want?
No, so at Z of 1,000, at the Z of 1,000, where the wiggles be?
So I guess it would be 10 to the minus 5. 10 to the minus 5 in velocity space as a fraction of the speed of light, right? Okay, so that would be the size of the wiggles, but the thickness of the line would be given by this formula. So I guess you say Z of 1,000, it would be 10 to the minus 14. So at CMB time, 10 to the minus 14 for the thickness of the line and 10 to the minus 5 for the wiggles. As time goes on, the wiggles get bigger, the thickness of the line gets smaller. Okay, so now we want to make a galaxy. Let me assume that in the middle here, there is some mass over density. And what happens then is that in phase space, the particles will travel clockwise around this middle of phase space. You may remember this from classical mechanics, not too long ago, if you didn't teach it recently. When you deform this line, qualitatively, it falls. First it is like that, and then all the particles wanting to move clockwise in phase space, this sheet will fold. And I'm just showing a cut of it. And when you are finally, if you look at the state of the galactic halo now, at a given position, you find a discrete set of values of the velocity.
Is it trivial to see that the line always goes through the origin, the curve?
That is a choice of coordinate.
That you adjust the choice of coordinates as time goes on?
It doesn't actually... It's not necessarily true, okay? It's not strictly true. I just put it there. But you see, qualitatively, it doesn't matter to me. What I want to say is that at a given position, you will have a discrete set of velocities. And if you move the coordinate system, that conclusion doesn't change. Moving the coordinate system is just boosting the galaxy or, you know, moving it a little bit.
It's obvious that this is continuous, that I can't break the line.
Excuse me?
It's obvious that I can't break the line.
You cannot make a hole in the line, in the limit where the number of particles is infinite, which I've taken. I don't know how else you would rip it. In principle, you can... stretch it. But, you have to imagine that it's evolving in the gravitational field of the galaxy, and that field doesn't have the effect of taking a big, bit of the fluid and just stretching it out. It, to some extent, yeah, but not sort of as a generic behavior.
I'm confused. I think what Dan is
Haven't, this is still all your question, okay, it's trying to address here. So you guys are saying I couldn't draw this line as just one primordial sheet with the primordial velocity dispersion because everywhere else there are also structure formation happening. And that's correct. So the effect of that is that instead of the primordial velocity dispersion being relevant, what is relevant is the effective velocity dispersion associated with the structure formation. So I'm asking you to imagine, go to outside the galaxy and intergalactic space, and there may be some structure there. What is its velocity dispersion? Okay, and actually I don't think that there's much known a priori about that. I will have to assume, in what I'm going to say, that this is very much smaller than the velocity dispersion of the whole galaxy. That of the whole galaxy is like 300 kilometers per second. For the model to have validity, I have to assume that this is small compared to that. Sorry.
10%.
Say at 10% some validity. But of course, 1% more validity. That is to say, if you have 10%, you'll have some caustics, but they will also be rather fuzzy.
Don't you still preserve the caustics in the original structure?
Yeah. That's right. But let's imagine that it becomes, yeah, it, you preserve the structure, but it will be, the caustic structure, but it will become more and more fuzzy. Yeah. I will...
The number of particles you can resolve the caustic.
Yes. Right. No, you're right about that. There's an issue of resolution here. If you have sufficient resolution, you can always see the caustics associated with, you know, any wrapping of the sheet. But let's suppose you have poor resolution, then you may not see that. In fact, in many cases, if you look at, say, the effect of the dark matter caustic upon baryonic matter, the resolution will be relatively poor. But of course, if you had an axion detector, the resolution would be very high. I don't know whether you would see this. I didn't do the calculation.
Pierre, you have suddenly shifted from the x variable, which has both signs plus or minus, to r.
Yes.
The radius variable. Something I have to worry about. Is there some subtleties about that?
You're right to worry about it, but so I have to go a little fast. That's right. I have assumed R and R dot, which implicitly assumes a spherical symmetry. But spherical symmetry has nothing to do with the game at this point, because I'm only talking about topological properties. It is because I have to show you a two-dimensional cut that I show, you know, R and R dot. Okay, so I will no longer worry about the velocity dispersion, not to mean that it is necessarily zero, but, okay, I don't know what it is, I have to assume it is relatively small.
So are you assuming it's not higher up the cluster? Or...
So I'm not sure. I think you have, the word has to be defined more precisely to say that this is inconsistent with it. If there is too much structure falling in, then it will be, I mean, then actually you will still have caustics, but as I said, they will be so messed up that in most situations they will not be relevant. So it's an issue. I like to put it in terms of this velocity dispersion, which has to be sufficiently small. Okay. So Say this again.
I thought there was some estimate, 50 major mergers of a galaxy until it gets to its final size. Am I remembering that right?
Well, first, I'm skeptical of the n-body simulations because of their resolution.
Right, but it will track the.
Not a property of the
resolution. It'll tell you where sort of the big things are. It won't tell you, the little clumps might not have the right shape, as you're saying, but it will tell you how many clumps hit each other. I agree, it may not tell you what the clumps should look like, but it could tell you.
Well, I rather, instead of looking at the simulations, I would like you to look at the present galaxy. It is true that in the past there may have been a bunch of mergers, but the mergers that happened in the past lie in this region of phase space. The stuff that is falling in right now, it certainly will produce a flow and associated caustics. So the fact that there are mergers in the past is not necessarily inconsistent with the existence of caustics. It's an issue of degrees. If there were no mergers in the recent past, then all this caustic structure should be there up to, you know, some place in phase space, you know, which would be determined by when the merger happened. Notice, by the way, that in phase space you have a separation, you know, of thermalized part of the halo and unthermalized, which you don't have in physical space. That is to say, in phase space, this is one of the powerful properties of phase space, is it actually separates. Yeah. Sorry, could you say this again?
So in this outer one, you saw this which you outline by right hand.
Let's suppose this goes all the way, shows up here.
So there are also many of them in the second ring, or in the second ring, or the whole second ring corresponding to this.
Absolutely. In principle, there is structure. There is structure everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, I don't say how big is this structure. I say, in principle, it is there. Okay.
It's assuming it's narrow, really narrow compared to the distance between the ring.
I rather answer questions, but it is true. I'm going extremely slowly. So, a caustic, to come back to an earlier question, appears over here and over here and so on, because the physical space density is the integral of the phase space density along the velocity direction, and in the limit of zero velocity dispersion you actually have a divergence at these spots. And a very useful way to think about caustics, the location of caustics, is that they separate regions where you change the number of flows. So here there's one flow, then there's three flows, and then five and seven. They always change by two, and the caustic appears where the number changes. And from this right away you can see that you have outer caustics which are topological spheres, because if you come in, so you don't assume any symmetry, you just come in from far away, you have one flow, at some point you must have three flows, well that's where you have the first caustic, then you have five flows, the second caustic, and so on. Okay, these are the so-called outer caustics. Now it turns out, so they're associated actually with the places where the product, the flow going out reaches a maximum radius and then falls back in. It turns out that there's also a caustic associated with the flow coming in and going back out. But you couldn't see this on this graph because it's a two-dimensional cut of phase space. What you can see on this graph is that in the limit of spherical symmetry, the origin must be singular, because if you have no angular momentum, which is required for spherical symmetry, all the particles move on radial orbits, they all have to go through the galactic center, and you can show that that will produce a divergence in the density at the galactic center. So there is in fact a caustic in the case of spherical symmetry, which is a point at the galactic center. But when you give angular momentum, I claim, and I think this is true, I think it's mathematically proven, that this point becomes a ring. So let me first state the result. Just from topology, the outer caustics are topological spheres, and the inner caustics are closed tubes whose cross-section is given by this pink shape, called a D-4 catastrophe. And so this is actually where the density diverges. And it's a tube with this cross-section, and it wraps around the galaxy. And the galactic center would be in this direction. Now, I can't really derive this, but I like to show, nonetheless, that why this happens, because it's, I think it's an interesting exercise in topology. Now, this is a little, some of these dots are not mine, okay? So, I come back to physical space. I apologize, I'm going back and forth. Now I'm in physical space, and I'm showing you a two-dimensional cut of physical space. I want you to imagine all the particles that are on some topological sphere surrounding the galaxy. Okay? And this is a cut. So in the first frame, I just show you a circle because it's the cut of a sphere. And I want you to imagine how these particles move when they fall in and out. Right? They will be attracted, they make an inflow, and then they will make an outflow. And of course, you have to imagine that there's a succession of such spheres. I'm just drawing one sphere, but there's a whole succession of such spheres. Well, I will assume that there's angular momentum. And so then what happens is that qualitatively, the top will fall in like that and end up at the bottom. And the bottom will end up at the top. And then what that means is that this sphere is actually turning itself inside out. And when a sphere turns itself inside out, you necessarily go through a singularity, which is a ring. And that is basically the ring caustic. Okay, just think about this flow coming in and out. You can think of it as a flow of spheres turning themselves inside out. You will then see in your mind's eye that there must be a singularity which actually in this picture occurs over here and over there. Okay, well, I don't know whether that did the trick, but the conclusion actually here is also, I showed these little points, but you can parameterize this flow near the caustic and show that this should be its generic shape. And so this is just a bunch of particles flowing. They are actually typically at their distance of closest approach to the galactic center when they go back out, and the density diverges on this peculiar shape.
Okay, you're not.
You need to put in angular momentum.
Okay,
yeah, if you have no angular momentum, then the whole ring collapses to a point.
Right.
And you need to have actually net angular momentum to have a nice ring, because if you have a more complicated angular momentum distribution, this ring will collapse in some complicated way. But so I have to assume net angular momentum. In fact, I made the list of assumptions thus far here. And I think I'm being complete here in saying that I only need to know that there is collisionless dark matter. I need to assume that the velocity dispersion of infralic dark matter is small enough. So I'm not saying there can't be any structure, but it has to be sufficiently small. I picked here 30 kilometers per second as maybe some maximum, but you have to realize that, you know, in the Magellanic clouds, the velocity dispersion is only of order, I'm not an expert, I think, but it is 10 kilometers per second or something like that. But of course, there's a lot of stuff falling onto the galactic halo, dark matter, which falls in without being part of the Magellanic clouds. And so a priori, the velocity dispersion could be much less than 30 kilometers per second. In fact, I think it is. I will imply that later. You have to realize that even between Magellanic clouds, and of course we don't see many satellites around the Milky Way, there is still dark matter flowing. And then for these rings to be nice circles, you need to have a smooth component of net angular momentum. But of course the baryons carry net angular momentum, and it's natural to assume that the dark matter would too. Exactly right.
And this would just every now and then there'd be a matter of object. And it's not where the sphere itself self-intersects, it's just where it pinches off.
It's where it pinches off, that's exactly right. It's not where it self-intersects, there's nothing singular but where it pinches off. And let me just emphasize for clarity, I drew one sphere pinching off, but of course there's a succession of spheres that pinch off at the same place or just nearby place because the flow is continuous.
So I guess I would expect the pinch off place to sort of move out.
That's right, it can move out and it can move whatever, but it is it's like a domain wall moving, you see. It's just a topological object. It is actually, one can talk about other caustics, but for example, you know, the sharp lines of light you see at the bottom of a swimming pool is one of the standard examples. And unfortunately, they move very fast, so you don't see them very well, but these lines are there as topological objects, and they move, but they always keep their structure as a caustic, and they can combine and so on. So this caustic can move in some arbitrary way, but it should always be a ring, and it should always have this cross-section. Now, it's true that if you don't have net angular momentum, this could be so complicated, I don't vouch for it being recognizable. And also, I should say, it's a minimum structure, because by adding more structure, you could always make other caustics and so on. So actually, and this is, I think, worth pointing out, is that the model I'm presenting is actually, you can be characterized as the minimum phase space structure of galactic halos.
I have a very naive question. If dark matter, do interact with each other, then this discussion is not relevant anymore, or is it still relevant?
It is, if it interacts so much, that, so what happens then is that, in fact, D'Urville theorem doesn't apply in the six-dimensional phase space. It only applies in the six and dimensional phase space. So what that really means is that if you look at this phase space structure, these particles will not collide and it will get all messed up. You see.
Right, it would completely messed up, but you would still be flowing on some six and dimensional.
Right, but six.
But only as one particle. Right?
Yeah, in six and dimensional phase space, is just a particle.
It's just one particle.
And then you have to project this on three dimensional physical space to have caustic. So I think what happens when you collide, when the particles collide, this thing is just completely messed up. So actually, this is a more maybe realistic picture of phase space in the limit of spherical symmetry, the number of flows actually on Earth is of order 100. Because they're roughly of order 100 is actually the ratio of the age of the galaxy, which is the age of the universe, divided by the infall time at our location, which is about 10 to the 8 years. Well, one point that I want to make is that if you want to resolve this in phase space by putting particles in a simulation, you need something like 10 to the 12 particles just to have the phase space down to our own location in it. And this is a strict minimum. Okay, this is only down to our location, not to the galactic center. Okay, so...
Does that mean that if you want to resolve further out, you need fewer?
Yes, right, because... Basically, right. In fact, I think if you look at the simulations, they do in fact see outside, they will see a few flows. And actually the caustics, they don't actually state this, but the caustics are a mathematical consequence of the flows. They see a few flows, and actually I think that's roughly consistent with the number of particles. If you then go in with too few particles, the whole thing gets messed up. So actually, I would like to do better. Actually, I didn't bring a clock on my... Oh, there's a clock. I would like to do better by assuming something about some dynamical equations to predict where are these caustic ring radii. And this is based upon work about self-similar infall. And actually, I thought maybe for the sake of time, I may not describe this model to you, but just take its prediction. I'll just say there is such a model and take its prediction for the caustic ring radii, unless, you know, of course I'm happy to talk forever, but I'm not sure you're happy to listen forever. So, in the self-similar infall model, when you have added angular momentum to it, the caustic ring radii are predicted to have this pattern, which I mentioned earlier, 40 kiloparsec divided by an integer. Jmax is a parameter characteristic of each halo, which is related to the maximum angular momentum of halo particles in a given flow. And so it sets actually, if there's more angular momentum, the ring radii will become bigger, proportional to this parameter. Now this parameter could have a value for each galaxy. But once you set all these factors, then the radii should go like 1 upon n. And Will Kinney and I, we made a study of 32 galaxies with the idea that you might be able to correlate bumps in galactic rotation curves with these caustics, because the caustics lying in the galactic plane will make some disturbance on the rotation curve. Now, we used for this a set of galaxies which we didn't select ourselves, but Sanders, Bigerman, and Broyles did. There's about 32 galaxies that these gentlemen picked for being extended, well-measured, isolated galaxies, which, you know, well-measured rotation curves. And you'll see they have bumps all over the place, and, you know, they don't fall like one upon n in every galaxy. But there are many possible reasons for bumps. And we thought if part of the reason is cosmic rings, then by combining all these galaxies, we may see an effect. So what we do is we want to assume that, well, what we want to do is take all the galaxies, they all have the same age, so you don't worry about this factor, but you can measure their rotation velocity, so that factor can be taken out. You don't know their J-max, but J-max has some distribution, and that distribution should be repeated for every value of n, n 1, 2, 3, 4. Do you know what I mean? You know, you have J-max distribution for the first ring, but then the same for the second ring, the third ring, and so on. So, I mean, you do the obvious thing. You take these galaxies, you rescale them according to the rotation velocity. I'd like to show a particular galaxy. This is NG3198. It doesn't show very well, but... So... You fit this to a line or to a quadratic polynomial, and the deviations from a smooth line are called the residuals. And then for every galaxy, you measure the root mean square deviation from a line or quadratic polynomial. You rescale the residuals, dividing them by the root mean square deviation. Then you add these deviations over the sample. You average them, actually, more precisely. You average them. Ni is the number of data points in a given bin, in the ith bin, and then you assign the error 1 upon square root of ni, because the galaxy should be independent. And actually, should not the what?
The deviation.
Yes. I'm not sure that that's true. Maybe that's true. But why you say so?
Just because the amount that you're changing the mass enclosed.
Well, I think actually when you look at the rotation curves, I think that's not necessarily obvious. Eh? I should maybe point out, thank you for your question, that we cut out the inner part of the each rotation curve, because we don't want to have the effect of the disk. We only want to have the effect of the halo. I don't know, it's not quite obvious that there are no, maybe really far out, but okay. But anyway, I don't think that affects the analysis, because I mean, that would just mean that far out, we will have very few deviations. But let me show what we get, okay? What we get is actually rotation curve, composite rotation curve, which does have two bumps, which actually, this one is like 3 sigma, and this one is 2.6 sigma. And they are at 40 kiloparsec and 20 kiloparsec, and they would be consistent with being the accumulated effect of the first caustic ring and the second caustic ring.
So you take the, I mean, I don't know if this question makes any sense. In that plot, If that was the Milky Way, where would Earth, if you were thinking about doing the experiment? I thought the idea is that the experiment would detect how state
is. I'm going to do the Milky Way right now.
Okay.
But this has been, in fact, rescaled to the Milky Way.
Oh, okay.
So that if you say that Milky Way also has a J-max in this peak, you would expect roughly 40, 20, 13.3, 10, 8, you know, 40 divided by an integer. So let's look at the Milky Way. This is the rotation curve of the Milky Way that I am aware of is the best measured. It's only actually the North Galactic rotation curve. It was measured in carbon monoxide. I point that out because carbon monoxide, when you use carbon monoxide to measure, you have the wavelength is 0.26 centimeters, 2.6 millimeter. The competing molecule is hydrogen, atomic hydrogen, which is 21 centimeter. So actually, rotation curves for the same size of dish done in carbon monoxide are roughly 100 times better resolution, angular resolution. Now this rotation curve is pretty complicated, but it appears to have these rises. Okay, some of them are more obvious, like this one and this one. But there's more of them. And I count more or less 10 rises. Maybe this one is not completely obvious, but most of them are actually pretty clear.
Do they correlate with the spiral arms in the disk?
I'll come to spiral arms, okay. They do correlate with the number of caustic rings, because, well.
How come there's so many now? In previous experiments, I thought there were two caustic rings.
Well, so we were at 40.
Oh, I see, this is scaled up.
Yes, yes, so actually, I'm sorry. This is the inner rotation curve of the galaxy. See, now actually we are over here at 8.5. It turns out also, Tony, thanks for the question. Actually, it's much easier to measure inside than outside for our own galaxy. So outside, actually, the data are much poorer. Spiral arms, okay, actually, Martin, you're reading my mind. Oh, now it has disappeared. Traditionally, bumps in rotation curves are interpreted as due to the presence of spiral arms. But I would say there are arguments to think that these are due to caustic rings rather than spiral arms. Because the number of spiral arms in the region of interest is much less than 8. I'm taking here 3 to 7 kiloparsec. Actually, there are 3 spiral arms known: Scutum, Sagittarium, and Loco, apparently, and I'm not an expert. But anyway, you don't expect 8. And the other reason I would say that you should take caustic rings, maybe, is that the rises are very strikingly sharp. Because, in fact, each one of them is sharp. They all, you know, start very systematically. You know, you think that the edges of them are not resolved by the data. And that, you of course, is very nice for caustic grains, because at the edges, this is supposed to be the position of a caustic ring, and at the edges of the caustic ring is where you have the divergence in the density, and it would be natural to have a sharp feature there.
There's something about this that's very exciting. I mean, you're looking at gas that's not in the caustic, and it's responding not to a density, but to a total mass
right
in the ring.
Right. Total mass of the ring is not infinite, it's some finite number. So suppose there's a ring, it's a high, it's a density ring.
Right.
And you've got a galaxy that's smooth with a density ring in it.
Right.
That density ring will influence the material outside of it, causing it to move.
Right.
But it will also influence material on the inside of it in the opposite direction, causing it to move oppositely. So I would imagine that the ring should induce derivative tails in the velocity curve.
Yeah, I did some, maybe not wholly detailed, but I did some kind of study of what a ring does, okay? Basically, the rotation curve is more or less flat, okay? And then let's imagine that all the, this is including everything. What we're gonna do is take the dark matter, some of it out of it, and put it in a ring. The dark matter located around the ring. So what I think will happen is qualitatively you'll have a downfall when you have taken the dark matter out. The effect of the ring I can calculate quite well because it's a very well-defined, that I do have formula for. What it does, it now adds some sharp feature like this, actually. And then I believe you should just add this and it will go qualitatively like that. This is what I would have expected.
You're plotting velocity as a function of radius.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm plotting the velocity as a function of radius. Well, you know, one would like to do better than that. I mean, I'm not saying. But I think it's not, you know, you have, it seems, this effect that it goes up and qualitatively goes down, goes up, qualitatively goes down. And it's not inconsistent with what you said. I think what you're saying is that it should go down here, right? But, well, actually, my time is up now. How much more time may I have, Mott? Or is it just a couple minutes? It turns out that, let me just show something. I thought it might be possible to see, when looking tangentially to a ring, you might see the cross-section of a caustic ring in gas, because the gas has accreted onto the ring. And in fact, in this IRS map of the galaxy, there is this triangle for the nearest ring. And it's correctly oriented. And also, you can take its position very accurately, and it coincides with the rise in the rotation curve, the one closest to us, exactly, within error bars. You know, it's this green line here. So actually, I'd like to conclude, yes, well, by making a summary, actually. You know, summary of evidence for dark matter caustics. You know, evidence is only so good as it is not explained by other things, right? So I want to, if you don't have dark matter caustics, what is the answer to these questions? So one question is, why does the 32 galaxy composite rotation curve that I showed and we discussed, does it fluctuate upward twice at 40 kilo, once at 40 kiloparsec, once at 20 kiloparsec? The probability of it is doing it randomly, by random fluctuations, is roughly 3 × 10⁻⁴. Why are there 8 rises in the Milky Way rotation curve between 3 and 7 kiloparsec? Of course, I'm not saying that you know, that proves that they are due to the dark matter. I'm just saying you expected roughly that number from dark matter caustics. Why are the rises so sharp? I didn't have much time to talk about it, but there is this IRS feature in the, this IRS map of the triangular feature. Why is that? Now, also, this triangle, if you look at it carefully, it's quite exactly an equilateral triangle, which you would expect for a dark matter caustic that's very tight. If the caustic is broad, then actually it can be deformed. But if it's tight, as this one is, it should approximate an equilateral triangle, which this feature is very accurately. The axis of this triangle is very parallel to the galactic plane, and it points in the right direction, because that's only a factor of two in probability, but still. And then finally, I would say, why does this triangle coincide with the rise in the rotation curve? I put down the numbers here, the location of the triangle and the location of the rise in the rotation curve. The probability, if you were to just say, well, there's some rise there anyway, the fact that it coincides is roughly a probability of 1 in 1,000. And then I didn't have a chance to explain, but if you believe all this, if you follow the caustic ring interpretation of all this evidence, you would then conclude that we are very close to this fifth caustic. It's actually only 50 parsec away, the distance to the cusp. And this has actually dramatic implications, because it means that the density on Earth is dominated by the flow making this caustic. And the density you infer is like 3 times the total density that had been estimated before. And it flows in a particular way, which you can derive from the model. So in these coordinates, which are galactic cylindrical coordinates, where phi is in the direction of rotation, and this is the radial direction, these are the velocity components. So you would conclude that the dark matter in this room is flowing, I think it's towards Cygnus. Actually, there's an ambiguity. There's 2 possible choices with this velocity and this density. So thank you very much.